She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties.
This is the number of words I didn't understand.
I promise I read it.
Y'all are nasty. Stop that shit.
Pretty sure I loved Tom before I met him.
Tom knows what he's doing. There's so much. There's just so much.
I feel like that wasn't loud enough. The Book Besties!
The Book Besties! Oh my god, what a shitty week it has been. It is so yucky out here.
Mm-hmm.
It has been yucky for days.
Mm-hmm.
Days of just yuck.
Yeah, we're getting the same weather here.
That's because we live like
4 hours from each other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As the crow flies. I don't know. I'm trying I can't even say the word. Never moving on.
Colloquialisms?
Yes, that's it.
Okay. So today is my day off before I enter into 3 weekends in a row of work.
Yeah, that sounds like bullshit. Mm. And after that is con. So
actually, after that is family camp.
Oh, and then con. Oh, yeah, you're just doing great.
And then the weekend after that is Tom's birthday party. Yeah. He's turning 42 this month, and we're doing a Douglas Adams party
for him. I'd love that. I wish we could come.
I still think you should.
I might just leave Matt.
You can come without him.
Ditch the boy. Ditch the boy. I
need to officially, like, send invites. I don't know if it's, like, okay to do this, but I'm just gonna do like a Facebook invite.
Do it. Just invite. That's what I do. That's what I do.
I haven't had to throw a birthday party for an adult in a while.
The last time I threw an adult birthday party, I didn't have kids.
Mm. I mean, I had one for Tom when we were in Texas when he turned 30.
Yeah. I remember that.
That's pretty much it.
Every birthday party Matt's had that I've thrown him was a Piper birthday party. And it's like, hey, adults hang out after. We're going to drink.
Yeah.
That.
And we did have a party for Tom when we first moved into the house we live in now.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't plan it. Tom invited his 2 closest friends. And then they just came over. And I took the boys. We were still living in our previous rental. Uh-huh. We weren't moved in here yet. Basically, the only furniture in here was a couch. And I left Tom, took the boys back to our house, and came back the next afternoon, and he was still passed out drunk.
Nice.
That's
a good-ass party.
That's what happens when he gets with his friends.
That's a good party.
Yeah.
That's a good party.
He's just a different guy when he's with the sailors.
I mean, facts.
Yeah. But I'm doing some pretty cool stuff at work this month. The Books. I'm very excited to see Christina Harrington, CC Harrington.
I know.
Author of Wild Oak.
We love her.
Yeah, we interviewed her last year at the Annapolis Book Festival, and we read her book for Battle of the Books in the city where I run
the Battle location Books. Where you live.
The secret location in coastal Virginia where I live. And she agreed to come, and I'm really excited. I'm going to have dinner with her, and it's just going to be great.
That's nice. I want to talk about this on here, and then I don't want to talk about it anymore. I no longer have a big kid job.
Yeah.
So I'm back to writing and stuff.
Yeah.
But so you guys aren't going to be hearing about that on here anymore.
Yeah.
It didn't end well, and my mental illness was blamed, so that was fun. But I want to move on from that. But I wanted to bring that up on here because I know people are going to ask, because I did talk about it a lot there at the beginning. So
I mean, your private life is always your private life. You don't have to share anything.
No, we cut off about it,
yeah.
You know? And that was like 5 episodes ago or so. And I just kind of got quiet about it. So that's why, gang. That's why. So Molly's back to writing for now.
Back to writing. And back reading to covering all of April's slack.
All the con books.
Yes. Do you want to show those off now, or do you want to do it at the end?
Let's do it at the end. I want to talk about this week's book. This week's book. Okay. This week's book is How to Lose...
This is How.
See? Yeah, This is How You Lose the Time War by Amala L.
Motor.
Motor and Max Gladstone.
I knew this book would be shit when Madeline Miller was the one that blogged...
See? I saw TikToks, and like the TikTokers I was following, I'm not going to call you out because I trust your reviews, and you said this was funny and fun and light, and bitch.
There are.
Do you know what this sticky note is, bitch? This is the number of words I didn't understand. There's 15 of them on there.
There are a lot of favorable reviews on Goodreads of this book. I'm pretty sure it has close to a 4-star rating. I'm opening Goodreads.
Oh, it's gone down to like a 3, I think.
Maybe that was because we both rated it so lowly.
I haven't rated it yet. I'm going to.
Well, I did.
It has
a 3.92 on Goodreads, which is a really good Goodreads review. And there's actually some authors... who am I thinking of? The author V.E. Schwab of,
I know who you're talking about.
The Addie LaRue.
Yeah.
Addie LaRue author. She gave it 5 stars. Said it was incredible.
It is definitely one of the brainy books. It is definitely pretentious. It is down pretentious lane. It is definitely in the NPR group. You are definitely going that direction when you're reading this book.
But I don't mind pretentious books. We had this discussion when we read Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, and basically every time we read John Green, which we are out of. We only have like one John Green book.
But he's retired, so we can't fucking. There's nothing we can do. John Green every season until he's on, but we can't, dude. We can. John, what the fuck?
I know. So anyway, I don't mind pretentious books, but this book was unnecessarily pretentious. There were parts that was like really
15 words I didn't know.
I was Googling a lot of words too. I didn't count them, but there were a lot. I was like, I don't even know 2 words in the sentence.
Right. Well, and it's because I count them because it makes my brain feel better that I'm like, oh, see, you're not stupid. You just, there's only 15 words in this whole book you didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this book is really popular. I was telling somebody at work I was reading it, and she was like, oh, is that like a queer romance novel? And I was like, no. And I hadn't gotten to the point yet where they were in love. And I know I'm saying all this before we've even given a synopsis, but she has friends who run a queer book club.
Uh-huh.
And so they only read like
queer novels. That's amazing.
Novels. Right. And this is one that they read. And so I was like, oh, well, I don't know. Maybe right now I don't understand.
You're like, what's happening. Think possibly it could be. I don't know, man. Like,
can you just give us an synopsis?
I will. I will. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Here we go. A synopsis. Red and blue. I'm sorry. I'm not. You know what? I'm not.
I'm not either.
I'm not. Red and blue, two sides of a coin, fighting in the endless war that is time. Red, an agent for the Commandant, and Blue, an agent for the Garden, are fighting throughout the strands of time. At first, Blue writes Red a taunt or some way to break up the monotony of her existence. As the two communicate throughout time and space, they slowly fall in love and realize they are being watched. Weird shit happens throughout this book, and the two are never truly together. The survival book has the internet divided on it, if it's brilliant or terrible. It is just plain confusing. I'm just plain confused, and I'm still not sure what I read. Let's get into it. So first question. We have read several co-author novels on this pod.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the writing style of L. Motar and Gladstone together?
I couldn't tell it was two authors.
I couldn't either.
There are some books that we read that I can tell very clearly, like, this person's writing this character and this person's writing this character. But I have to say, I know they have, like, a large back catalog separately. But, like, this is a novella. Like,
it is.
This is less than 200 pages. You really needed two people to write this. This is, like, that Justin Bieber song that had 20 authors and whole thing was Oh Baby, yeah. Oh Baby. Like, come on.
Baby.
20
baby,
authors on that. What were they doing?
And Usher was one of them.
Was there an author per letter? Like, I don't understand.
Everybody put a baby in. No, right. No, my guy. You need a baby here on that hook, not there on the hook. And now he's on the song, and now he gets credits for it.
But I couldn't tell there were two authors. It was pretty seamless.
It was seamless. I would be interested to see how they wrote, you know, every two-author duo has, like, a different origin story, right? Good Omen started his letters. Of friends writing back and forth. And the Royal We was a blog, right? And so I would be really interested to see how this came about. But like you said, you've never read either of them before? Mm-mm. I haven't either. I mean, they were new to me until I saw this. And I've heard
both of them.
I have too.
But I've seen never their read names.
Amal, she is really well known in the poetry's world. She's really versed in that world and, like, gotten all these NPR awards and stuff. And she's real in that world. And Max is real deep into the sci-fi world. So,
yeah,
that's who they are. I've never read them. I don't know who they are. They're strangers to me. They don't exist in our realm normally. The only The only reason this popped up is because it was on TikTok.
Well, and also partially this is my fault because when I was starting to make the social media stuff for this month, I saw one of the books you picked and I was like, nope, I'm not reading that. Nope.
The only reason I picked this was because, again, unnamed TikToker swore it was hilarious. I needed a short, funny read. Well, I needed a short, funny read.
Molly, there were parts of it that I laughed. And I read something to
Tom. Where?
Okay, so you know how they talk about, like, the sealing of letters?
Yeah.
Like, what, like, the proper way to seal letters?
But
then Red seals a letter inside a seal.
Yeah.
Like a live...
Live seal. Oh, yeah.
So I read that to Tom, and he thought that was fucking hilarious.
See, it's not us.
It's the humor, the same humor that you find in Tom's other favorite books.
Yeah.
It's that.
We're not the intended audience, I don't think.
Mm-mm. No.
We're not.
No. And I do like sci-fi, but this is not accessible sci-fi.
No.
This isn't.
I
don't know.
No. Starting early, page 16, we learn that both Asians are affecting time. And this is part of their war. I could not help but think about the butterfly effect throughout this whole novel. With the massive amounts of symbolism the author are shoving down our throats, what do you think the point of all this is? Like, why bring up the butterfly effect and, like, all the symbolism and what's their fucking point?
I think if I tell you my answer to this now, it will give away the ending.
Gotcha.
But I saw references to Doctor Who.
Yep.
And references to, like, Spy versus Spy.
Yeah.
It's like the Doctor Who ongoing plot about the Master and the Doctor. And how they chased each other through time.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what it is, except... Well, I don't know. When we get to the steampunk doctor, the Master she was kind of in love with him.
She made me think of Mary Poppins. Misty, I don't know why.
Misty,
yeah. Yeah.
I think she was my favorite of the doctors or of the Masters.
I haven't seen the one where NPH is him yet.
I haven't either. But is that what he is? Is he playing the Doctor? I thought he was playing something else.
He's playing something else, but he's
He's the doctor.
He's the master. He's the master in another format, I believe.
Gotcha.
I think it's like after, you know, because the master goes crazy, right? Tick tock. Time, you know, all that jazz, and he gets trapped and he loses his mind and he's going all crazy. I think it's post him losing his mind.
Well, there's another doctor.
And he's like more insane.
There's another master with
Gallifreyan.
Jodie Whittaker's doctor has a master. And he's not, I guess he's the one that must precede Misty because Misty dies. The master sacrifices herself. So. Yeah. All the spoilers for Doctor Who.
I mean, it's been out for a bazillion years.
And you can still watch it, though, because Tom and I are still working our way through. We haven't finished the Jodie Whittaker series.
Here's the thing. I don't think I'll ever understand this book.
No.
I'm not going to.
I think...
it wasn't intended for me to understand it.
I have very strong feelings about why they fought time. And I'm going to share them at the end because it's the reason that I ended up giving this book such a low rating. It was building on me. Like, I was like, okay. No.
I never was rooting for this book.
No.
The only thing I've ever did for this book was like, I really need this book to be done.
Yeah.
I really need this book to be done and it's hurting my brain and I don't understand it. And that is every time I started this book, I was like, I don't want to pick it up because I don't understand it.
And did you listen to the audiobook or did you read it?
I listened to the audiobook, which was really good. Like the narrators were great, but I had to follow along. I had to follow along because I needed subtitles because I don't understand all these words.
So I read the physical book, which I don't usually do when you're the host. Usually that's my audiobook. But I am reading for Con, so I was finishing up something like that. And I would literally just go, don't know that word, set the book down, Google. Okay, that makes sense.
Yep. I would have to pause, open the book. That's half of these tabs are either notes I've taken or words. I don't understand that I had to look up.
And it's told in like a collection of like letters.
So it starts where like one of the red or blue will start a monologue of some sort.
And what's happening in their timeline.
Right. But it's all like vague and facetious and just ramblings, right? And they're computer robot bullshits who are slowly becoming more aware and like falling in love with each other and more human, okay, as time goes on. They're becoming more human. And then they write a letter. And then it goes to the other person's point of view and so on and so forth. That's how this story is told.
Did you think they were both robots?
Yes.
Okay, so I thought that Red was an android and maybe Blue was like a seed?
Oh, I don't know. I assumed they were both some sort of mechanical otherworldly beings who are slowly becoming aware and like understanding and human.
Well, there was this discussion of this being how they're handling Earth, but they had done this on other planets too.
Yeah.
And that kind of reminded me of the awful Stephanie Meyer book, The Host.
I couldn't even read that.
It was really bad. But anyway, they talk about timeline as threads. So it's up thread and down thread. And
it made me think of string theory. And
because they also talk about the different strings with threads within the thread.
And like they're labeled like colors. Mm-hmm. So it's like B1275 or MS number 4. And it's like, who knows these codes, you dumbass?
Well, they made them up for the book. Like, they're not real. But
that we know of.
I thought that maybe Blue was some sort of like plant thing.
I don't know. I really don't. And that's like, I think the fucking point of this book. Okay, that's question two. Ready for question three?
Yep.
And you didn't think we'd fill an episode.
I still don't. I'm not optimistic.
We're 20 minutes in. We're doing good. There is so much. There's just so much.
Yep. The much is much.
The much is so much. Mm-hmm. But there are so many places in time these characters could have traveled to and been a part of. Mm-hmm. But the author purposely spoke of Genghis Khan, Julius Caesar, the lost city of Atlantis. They talk about the boy that commits suicide, Chanston or whatever. I had to look that up too.
And they talk about Apollo 1.
Yep. These are key points in time, or Atlantis, we think is, right?
Mm-hmm.
That our worlds change or life changes, right? Mm-hmm. These are all like pinnacle, spiraling butterfly effect bullshit mm-hmm. points that changes. What do you think that the implications that in the symbolism that the authors are using in these points in time to choose these specific points as metaphors, right?
I think they picked points in time that would be they would be well known by everybody. Mm-hmm. You're not picking like that minor story that happened in backwater Louisiana.
What about that boy that like the painting of the boy that committed suicide and they write poems about that Charleston one that they kept fucking talking about?
I was just like, I don't know what that one is.
And then there's a book they keep talking about that makes no sense.
It's just assumed that was made up.
Nope, that's a real book too. But what I found interesting about it is Red is, who works for the Commandant, is always in the violent things. Red was at Caesar. Red was with Khan. Red is with all these aggressive, angry motherfuckers. Red
watches the Apollo 1 astronauts burn on the flight.
Blue. I like green. Green's my favorite color. I'm sorry, guys. Blue goes and helps people learn how to forage and becomes a wife and like is in the middle, you know, the medieval times. Blue goes to Atlantis. Blue is never destruction. Blue is more of a builder.
Except when they meet each, when they don't talk
right
in person, but the first time that they're in the same timeline together, Blue aggressively attacks a lion to save Red.
It was a creature. I couldn't remember what creature it was.
I don't either. But we get the impression that even though Blue is the more nurturing one, mm-hmm. that Blue is actually destroying the earth.
Just differently. Mm-hmm. It's just different. And again,
they grow these plants that are,
I don't know. I get their symbolism there. If you understand all this symbolism, write us an email. bookbestiespod@gmail.com. Tell us, give us your full analysis of this book. We would love to understand it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great podcasting, Molly. These letters are their only point of contact, even though both Red and Blue have the technology and all of the experience at their fingertips. Mm-hmm. Did you find the letter writing to be clever or romantic in any way? Was there any of the puzzles or letter finding that you found, you liked or found the most interesting?
So I think the point of them not connecting in person was because they were on opposite sides of the war. So they're Romeo and Juliet. And they can't come together because they are also kind of both the warriors of their groups.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that the way that they delivered letters was like the most clever part. And the one that stuck out to me the most, besides the seal, because that was fucking hilarious.
That was hilarious.
Was the smudge on Blue's bill at the hotel.
Oh, I'm sorry. London. Yes, that was so clever because he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. There's something wrong with your bill. And she's like, let me see. And they're like, oh, and she's like, I'm going to keep this.
Yep. I was just like, how?
It's really, like, some of them were really clever. And I was like, okay. But, and then Like, did you see that embed when they were talking about the seals and the embeds? The first time they spelt it like embed, like you embed something in like soil. Mm-hmm. And so there's language conversation too, mm-hmm. because they use language differently. This book is you're going to be seeing this in college soon, kids.
And
authors,
I actually really wanted to like this book.
Yeah.
I think I was maybe like 20 pages in and I texted you and said, I think I'm going to like this one. And then as time was going on and the way that they were getting more clever and getting closer and falling in love through these letters, I was like, yeah, but I got to the point where I was like, oh, okay. It's like maybe like a 3.5.
Yeah.
But the ending, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know how you fall in love with somebody that you never meet, but then again, I'm pretty sure I loved Tom before I met him. So maybe that's hypocrisy.
I fell in love with Matt over like our messaging back and forth.
Emails was kind of how Tom and I. So, I mean, I guess you can. I don't know. I just,
the next question? You know what
they never explained that really left me baffled and kind of angry?
Uh-huh.
Is that they have all these clever ways that they're leaving their letters for each other, but they never explain how they get them there.
Yeah.
Like,
no, there's a
there has things. To be, you had to have come to the same thread.
Right.
In order to leave it.
When did you go to this thread?
Right. Time? And then when the Commandant shows Red that that Blue's threads have crossed hers and that the two of them are crossing threads frequently, mm-hmm. but never quite touching, really, she didn't figure out that, like, they were communicating with each other?
Yeah. Yep.
No, that's bullshit.
It is.
If the Commandant is really that bad at her job, then they could have just hung out and fucked because she probably wouldn't even have noticed.
Nope. And honestly, the thing that was frustrating for me, since we're talking about shit like this right now, we never understand the full structures of their militaries, mm-hmm. right? Or who they belong to. We're mm-hmm. just given their point of views. We're never really given full titles. We don't even know their real names, right?
Which we didn't realize we didn't know their real names until the end, when Blue leaves a letter and Red says it has her real name, on it.
Yes. And it's like, oh, I didn't know you knew my real name. What? You have a real name?
Right. you know, we often complain about books that are too long on this podcast, but this book was too short.
Like, yeah.
I needed more information. I don't understand the story.
No. No. So, let's just keep going. As Red and Blue get more versed in their letters writing, they become more human, in my opinion. To the reader, in my opinion. They seem to grow and wax on and on and become more enthralled with each other. Mm-hmm. Do you like this part of the storyline, or do you think Do you think the letter writing makes this book romance?
I don't think this book was romantic.
I don't either.
I mean, it starts really, like, from the beginning. You get the first letter from Blue, and she's like, ha ha ha.
I outsmarted you.
Do you like what I left for you, Red?
That's why I thought it was going to be a comedy.
Yeah.
Like, I am smarter than thee. Watch me beat you. That's where I got the spy versus spy vibe.
Yeah, that's exactly where I got it. I kind of got the, we're going to try to best each other, you know? Yeah.
And
I thought, that's really funny.
That's clever. That's mm-hmm. what the book, that's what I signed up for. That's the book I signed up for, not this letter writing Victorian romance in steampunk world. I don't get it.
And I just want to say that this is not us taking away from queer literature. Like,
no.
We both read
I love queer
books
lit.
Of all kinds, and we read a lot of queer books.
I love queer lit.
I'm not taking away from this. I didn't think it needed to be romantic.
Let's get into that part next, actually. This book is sci-fi, queer, time travel, steampunk, and romance somehow, or so people on the interweb say. Where do you put this book? You're a librarian. Where are we shelving this?
Well, I have my library's copy, and we put it as sci-fi.
Okay.
I time travel, so sci-fi for me.
It's predominantly just time travel. There are so many science-y fucking words in here that I understood. Like, I knew the word. Like, I knew it was a science word, but I was like, that sentence together makes no sense, but I'm assuming somewhere in the world someone understands that.
I just felt like the better story here was the competition between the two sides. Mm-hmm. And you didn't need to... The letter writing could have continued to be funny, and we're one-upping each other. And, like, here's a seal. Like, you want me to seal my letters? I put it inside a fucking seal.
Yeah, like...
Like, that's funny!
Yeah, that's funny. It was... Yeah. The Seeker... Oh, no. Okay, I jumped ahead, sorry. When we finally learn about the structure of their worlds, we don't really learn the full structure and their leadership. Was this what you expected, or did you feel like it? Did you feel like it fit in the novel?
I feel like I don't care about military structure because I mean, that might be something that's interesting to, like, maybe you and maybe even Matt and maybe even Tom. But to this day, I still couldn't tell you what the difference in the ranks is. And I'm a military spouse.
Right.
I mean, but, Tom's retired now, but I.
Did you, is that what you expected as you were reading? Like, is that what you were expecting from each character side? Or did you have any expectations?
I still don't get it. Like, was Gardner, like, a plant? They talked about, like,
Okay, so blue.
Was she a seed? Like,
I was seeing it. Garden was God. Commandant was Satan. Good and evil.
You think it's a heavenly war?
I think it's good versus evil. I think green, because I think Garden
That's interesting
is,
because
Garden
I...
is building and you know, like, most of the time Garden is healing things. Sometimes they're destructing it, but sometimes they're healing things. And Red is fixing shit and there for the evil stuff, but they're not always doing the bad thing. So I think it is
That's interesting because I got the opposite feeling. I felt like blue was on the wrong side.
Interesting.
And red was on the good side.
Interesting. See, but that's the point of this fucking book, right?
Is it, though?
I don't goddamn know. I didn't write it! Okay, let's talk about the Seeker.
Okay.
The Seeker became a big part of the book. He/she is constantly on the bootstraps of Red and Blue throughout time and strands. What did you think of this? Is this one of them, just following them in time? Mm-hmm. Or is it another agent? I don't know. I really don't. So can you explain it to me?
This is what I think, but they don't answer it. So no. I'm just going to tell you what I think.
Okay.
I think it is Red going back through time during that time where she's going back to find Blue after Blue kills herself. She's consuming all of these pieces of them to hide their tracks. And that makes sense to how Commandant couldn't figure out that they had actually communicated.
But then how did Red get back in time? That's never explained.
She kept going down Thread.
I don't know. It didn't make sense to me.
Was it up Thread? Which one was the future and which one was the past?
I don't know.
It's like we don't even care about podcasting.
It's not even that we don't care. It's like we didn't read a full novel. You know what I mean? It's not like we didn't spend...
I promise I read it.
We did. I read all of this. I even read the acknowledgments. I read the reader's guide. I did all the things in this book. Mm-hmm. I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it.
So I texted my friend Megan in Florida, Megan. Time travel books are, like, kind of her favorite.
Uh-huh.
That's, like, a preferred genre of hers. And I texted her and said, I'm reading this book called How to Lose the Time War, and I really don't understand it. And she goes, is it time travel? And I was like, yes.
Sure.
She was like, oh, well, then maybe I'll like it. I was like,
no.
I don't think you will.
Is Tom planning on reading this?
I don't know.
Tom, will you read this, please? And tell us, and do a Tom quick take and just explain it to everybody for us, please.
He may need to, because then this is what Megan said. I explained to her what was happening, and she goes, oh, that's boy time travel.
Tom, Tom, is this boy time travel?
I was like, I don't know. I don't really like time travel. There's only been one time travel novel that I have liked. Because I feel like they...
I like time travel novels normally.
Huh?
I usually like books like this.
There's only been one that I felt like really did a good job. And that is All Our Wrong Todays. Or is it Tomorrow's? One of those. All Our Wrong Todays, I think.
I don't think I've read that.
It was originally when we first season started making a list of books we really thought we should put on pod. It was on my very, very original list.
Your first TBR for the pod.
Yes, because I had already read it and I thought you would enjoy it, but it doesn't really match the vibe of the pod. Mm.
But now we read really everything, good. So fucking throw it on, maybe. It might be better than this book.
It would be better than this book.
Near the end of the book, Red and Blue realize that their time together is becoming limited. Mm-hmm. But they still write each other, even when the Commandant makes Red work on the poison letter. Good job, Molly. Mm-hmm. Good job, past Molly. You can write letters, notes. Commandant makes Red work on the poison letter and send it to Blue. Did you think Blue would read it and die? Or do you think...
I understood why Blue did read the letter, even though she knew it would kill her, that it was poisonous. I understood that she did it because, at this point, she loved Red enough to know that if she didn't read it, or if she didn't eat it, then... which... Side note, that is one of the ways that they read letters.
They consume it physically. Yeah.
Like, at one point, Red puts it behind her eye. I don't really understand. But anyway.
Behind her eye, physically. She would, take her eyeball out and, in her mechanics, shove letters.
Mm-hmm.
And put her eye back and then store it there and read it.
Mm-hmm. But Blue had decided that if she didn't consume the letter, which was poisonous, that Red would get in trouble. Yeah. And she didn't want that for her. So she just kills herself.
She just dies. She's like, you know what? It's okay. I've died once. I'll die again. It's fine. Which, I don't remember her dying, but for some reason she died.
She didn't die. What happened was, when she was... 7, she was infected. And this is going to lead us to the next question. She was infected by the other side, by Commandant's side.
Right.
And because this happened, she got very sick, and Garden
put her to bed.
Pruned her off so that she could heal before she came back.
That's right.
She didn't die.
He put her to bed. Literally. He put her in the ground and covered it in soil. And so this perfectly leads into the next question. This book ends in a letter. Blue is alive again, spoiler alert. Did you like this ending? We're literally the last letter goes, I'm alive, you're alive, it's time for us to be together, fuck the world, we're gonna take over,
this is how we win the time war. So I'm going to sort of deviate from this question a little bit to give you my full answer of why I didn't like this ending.
Okay.
So we have this story that I just mentioned about when Blue was 7, she was cut off because she was infected by the other side. So when Blue dies and Red discovers that Blue was dead, she goes into this rage spiral of guilt and... Yeah.
Anger, she's
not in a good place. Like, they try to imprison her, like her own side's imprisoning her.
Yeah.
She's breaking out, she's killing everyone, she's really violent.
She's destroying shit.
She's heading back through time to find Blue. And she goes to when Blue was infected by the other side, and it turns out that she's the one that infected her. That is clever, except the way that she did it. When I read this part, I was so incredibly fucking angry, because the way that Red infects Blue is by kissing her. This grown-up kisses the 7-year-old.
Yeah, the child.
And I think it's supposed to symbolize that they've been inside each other all along, that they've been a part of each other all along. But this is the reason why I do not like time travel books. They're one of the most popular time travel books, The Time Traveler's Wife.
Yeah.
That book, he goes back in time frequently to when his wife is a child and tells her someday we'll be married.
Yeah.
And then on her 18th birthday, takes her virginity because, well, what does it matter anyway? She's my wife. And tell me that's not grooming.
What bothered me more is the sex with his teenage self a lot.
Oh, yeah. He went back in time and gave himself a blowjob.
Yeah, he used to...
That happened on, like, the fourth page of the book, and I was like, I'm out. But I read the whole thing because we did it for our former book club.
Yeah.
This book is the same. You've got this whole idea of, well, we belong together because in one point in time, I infected you through my love by kissing you.
Right.
And that is grooming and pedophilia.
But in the beginning, they talk about how Blue is an adult and Red is 13. So, like, we don't know how old either of them are throughout this whole novel. Like, they don't talk about age.
Because it's wibbly wobbly timey wimey. But I'm still not okay with it. So, no. I know you haven't watched it yet, but I watched the 4-part docuseries it's called Quiet on the Set. We'll put a link to the IMDb below, but it's about the heyday of the 90s and early 2000s of Nickelodeon. And, like,
the Amanda Show, all that, in that time frame.
That stuff, like, it's about the stuff that happened to those kids. And so I am not a fan of Ariana Grande. Like, I just kind of find her annoying, and I've never quite gotten over her, like, licking the donut in the donut store. I don't understand that. But, well,
she's not a girl's girl. She's cheated on several husbands and stolen, you know, she's not a girl's girl.
Well, anyway, I'm never going to deny that she's talented. She has an amazing voice. But watching that docuseries and seeing, so I was too old to have watched the Nickelodeon shows that she was on. But watching the positions that they put her in, she had a whole thing where she was in bed and pouring water on herself and milking a potato. And like this, and she had her bra hanging and she would put melons in it and lick her own feet. And it is incredibly a blatant example of over-sexualization of teenagers.
Yeah.
And I just have such a problem with this. And this is what we talked about with Chezzy last week. And if you missed that episode, go listen. Honestly, that's one of my favorite episodes we've ever done.
It's a great episode.
This is one of the things we talk about. As young women, when we start showing signs of puberty, then it's like the men are like, look at her. She's coming into her magic. She's becoming a woman. And by the way,
y'all are nasty. Stop that.
A second shout out to Florida Megan. There is an interview at the end of the audiobook for The Grace Year with the author, and she talks about her inspiration for writing the book, and Megan pointed it out to me, and so I went back and listened to it, and she was basically inspired to do it because she watched an old man leer at a woman, a young woman, a 13-year-old, and then she watched another woman look at that 13-year-old like she was competition.
Fuck is wrong with people.
I just really have an issue with that. And to me, I think they were trying to make it romantic in this book, that, like, they've been a part of each other all this time and they are time travelers, so it's supposed to matter. But I don't like that. I don't like that you predispose that this is
the... You're insinuating it's grooming.
It is.
It's insinuating it's grooming.
It is. And I don't like it.
Boo.
And so this book went from a solid 3 to me. I rated a 1.5. Damn. I gave it a 1.5 because there is a story here that's original. But I'm sorry. I am never going to support a book that is pedophilia.
Yeah. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about for this book?
No, I really don't.
Okay. So let's talk about Annapolis and what's coming up.
All right. Well, first, next week, we're going back to Allie Hazelwood, and we are reading Bride, which is her first dive into paranormal romance.
And I'll turn this off next week, but I have the Afterlight version.
British imports. It is a vampire and a werewolf. and they get married. And they're, I've read, like, I'm on page 4, and they've never met each other, but they're marrying each other in sort of a, like, to be, to bring peace between the two.
Nice.
All right, so that's what we're doing next week, and then we have one more book this month, you have it? Okay, so The Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches.
Super cute, super fun, super light. We're going to have a good time with that.
I think so. I think we're going to have a good time with Bride as well. Yes. And we have an interview with the author duo Liv Constantine.
I'm so excited about this, guys.
This is the first time we've got to interview a pair of authors, and so we're really excited about it. That will be later in this month, and we're doing that so we can prepare for Annapolis Book Festival, because we have lots of books to read. So we'll be reading The Senator's Wife for Liv Constantine. I apologize, I don't have a copy of that up here with me right now.
Yes.
These are the authors we'll be interviewing live.
I have two of the books.
Okay. So we will be interviewing the author of Good Different, and her name is Meg Eden Kuwat. Is that how you say your last name?
Kuwat? Yeah, Kuwat. That's how I want to say that. K-U-Y-A-T-T. Kuwat?
And we'll ask her. But this is it's a middle grade novel about a neurodivergent girl, and Meg herself is neurodivergent. Then we're going to do Queens of London by Heather Webb. This is historical fiction. Which is,
I've already finished Molly's this book. Jam. I really dug this book. I have a lot of questions, Heather. I have so many questions.
Questions, woman. I just realized that the blurb on the back of this book is Stephanie Dre, which is funny because we are also talking to Stephanie Dre.
Which that book just came out on the 14th.
Of March.
So I haven't had a chance to read it. It's up next.
This is a thick one.
It is a thick bitch.
But Becoming Madam Secretary by Stephanie Dre, we'll be talking to her. And I'm pretty sure she and Heather are in a panel together.
Yes, they are.
At Annapolis Book Festival. Then we're also going to be reading Excavations and talking to Kate Myers. And I finished this one, and it's so funny.
I heard it's super good.
It's really good.
It's so good. I heard it's funny.
It's very funny. Like, yes, you will like this one, Molly. And then we are also going to be talking to Tara Shelton Harris and her
about her book,
Summer in Savannah.
When Tara finally, when we got the green light for her, I was like, yes!
I know, me too. Yes! And then, like, small podcast world, when she emailed us back to tell us that she was in, she was like, yeah, I'm friends with Nikki Payne, and I just listened to her episode, and it was so good. I'm so excited.
Us too, boo! Us too! We love Nikki!
I know! But it was just so funny, because she's friends with Nikki, who we love, and she listened to our episode and was like, this makes me excited to be on there. So it's this is so cool.
The fact that we can make you feel comfortable is fantastic, yo.
Yeah. And by the way, all 5 of these authors this year appeared on both of our lists.
Yep.
Last year, and Liv Constantine, too, was on both of our lists. Last year, we kind of bartered for some. It was like, hey, I want to do this one. I want to do this one. I want to do this one. But this year, all of these women we wanted.
As soon as we saw it. Because we saw the list and we're like, these are all talented women.
Yeah. Yeah.
All talented women. And honestly, we weren't skipping the guys. There is no male fiction authors this year that are vibing with us. Most of the male authors this year are nonfiction. And the only one
that I was interested in was the children's book illustrator. Mm-hmm. Because
not really our content.
He's not our content, but I'm a children's librarian. But I can't wait.
That is news to me.
Fuck you, respectfully. but I can't wait, because I just think these are it's going to be good.
And remember, guys, we are going to be live on the 27th.
And we are streaming to TikTok,
Instagram, YouTube.
And YouTube. We're doing all 3 this year.
Saturday.
And then it will be recorded as well. And turn into a pod audio episode. So if you don't follow us streaming, or you don't follow our YouTube, you can listen to the audio. Tom just has to package it all together.
He will. He's awesome at that.
Yeah, he is. And last year was just so much fun. And
we're gonna have a blast this year too.
Yeah, we've already interviewed Trish, who is the chair of the event.
She runs the things. Trish is Annapolis Book Festival.
Mm-hmm. And you'll get to hear pieces of that. I don't know, maybe Tom can tack some of the interview onto this episode. And then
Tom does his magic, man. We don't ask questions.
Yeah. Listen, the intro he did for last week's episode, I literally was dying. I was laughing so hard.
And Robert.
I was laughing so hard. And then Chezzy saying, well, some of us do both. And I was like, no.
Tom knows what he's doing.
Yeah. He's pretty good at it. Yeah. So anyway, that's all we got. I'll
see you next time, guys.
Yeah. May we're wrapping up the season. What? Well, no, I'm sorry. We're going to have some June episodes because we still wanted to do Pride.
We want to do Pride, but it's a short season. We're doing the short seasons now, guys. So
yeah, because we're rolling into my busy season and I'm going to do Smut Girl Summer with Nurse Katie.
Right.
And yeah.
Maybe it'll be my Smut Girl Summer too. And I'll write a smutty book.
That would be great. It would be really great if you would just finish a book.
I would really like to finish my book.
You were so funny with Chezzy last week.
That woman talks about publishing like it's just going to the bathroom. It's so fucking rude.
But she has a lot of books that are not published yet.
Right,
so.
Right. But finished novels.
Yeah, they're finished.
Bitch.
She's.
I love you, Chezzy.
Her brain is remarkable.
I love talking to her just about literary. Okay, this is not. Nothing. Like, we don't need to talk about this on pod.
Yeah, but we still have 10 minutes to fill the hour, so fine with me.
Her brain's just remarkable. The way she analyzes fiction and just sees it, it's just... Mm. Like we said, guys, go listen to the fucking episode. You have no idea what you're missing.
Yeah, she's really
great. No idea what you're missing. So,
and today is the anniversary of the release of Grabus Fair, actually.
Happy anniversary,
boo. My memories.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah. Anyway, so I think that's it.
I have nothing else, guys. We will see you guys next week.
Yeah.
Bye. Yeah.
Bye.
Trish from the Annapolis Book Festival with us. Thank you for joining us today, Trish. There was so much food there last year.
Yes.
Can you give us a preview of who's coming this year for your food trucks?
Yes. You know, last year was the third year, I think, we offered the food trucks. And every year we've added like a couple more because the past 2 years we've run out of food by like 3 o'clock.
It's, wow. So there was lines last year, guys. They had the Cal one, the ice cream place. And there was a line halfway through the field.
Yes. Yes, we have them back again. It's Sweet Satisfaction.
Yes, that's it.
Smoothies, ice cream. We have a PK Mobile Kitchen, which is fabulous chicken and burgers. Mm. And then new this year is Picante, is Mexican food, new restaurant downtown. We also have one of Pizza This, which I'm excited about. Greek on the Street. They were here last year, I believe.
Uh-huh. That sounds good.
The Daily Crepe and Seafood Again by Chef John, Crabtown Cuisine.
Guys, the Annapolis Book Festival is
April 27th from 10 to 5, all day, all free, open to all. On Instagram, we are Annapolis Book. And then on Facebook, it's Annapolis Book Festival. And then, of course, go to our website, annapolisbookfestival.com.
Thank you for joining us on Book Besties. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly and not those of anyone else. Today's book was This Is How You Lose the Time War by Amala L. Motar and Max Gladstone. Your book besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins, editing by Thomas Watkins, and music is Sleep Sweetly by Brigida. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.